Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, John Schwab here, and welcome to episode 172 of the Curtain Call Podcast. Curtain Call is the podcast that takes you deep behind the scenes of the theater world, bringing you in-depth conversations with the story makers that are shaping the future of theater. We pull back the curtain to reveal the stories behind the stories and give you a glimpse into the backstage world like no other podcast does. Now, this week, a warning, it is impossible for me to do this week show without swearing, so this isn't one for the office or in front of the kids. You'll understand why in about 10 seconds. You've been warned. This week, I'm chatting with a dear friend of mine, Lourdes Fabres, who you may have seen in Sandman, or The Power, or No Time to Die, or Good Omens, or you know what? I could go on and on. She's an incredible actor. But Lourdes is currently appearing in the untitled Fuck Miss Saigon play at the Young Vic in London. Kimber Lee's hard-hitting but hilarious play is running now until the 4th of November, as at the time of recording. The play had its initial run at the Manchester International Festival earlier this year and has garnered great notices since opening last month here in London. Now, this is a play that deals with generational trauma and enforced stereotypes amongst Asian cultures and popular entertainment, from Puccini to Bublil and Schoenberg. Watching this play made me reassess my understanding of what, you know, watching movies, plays, and musicals that I had grown up with and loved, and how I kind of remember them or misremember them as it is. It is a must-see play. It's funny, it's relevant, and it's utterly brilliantly acted and directed. Lourdes plays a few characters in the play, and we sat down at the Young Vic to talk about that. To talk about her journey and landing the part, which is, oh my gosh, I love that story, and the journey of the play itself. Also, how much it means to her and her cast to be able to tell this story every night. Have a listen.
Hi, I'm Lourdes Fabres. I play Rosie and Cho Cho and a couple of other nameless characters in the untitled Fuck Miss Saigon play.
I love it. You also play stage management. You came out in the gear once, didn't you? I was like, oh my God.
5 seconds.
Yeah, it was amazing.
But I thought I'd have fun with it and turn it on its head. And then I play some Polynesian peasant. But I play her half baked, so I was like, yeah, give me a little Hawaiian smoky.
Yeah.
Just to make it different, but also fun.
It's rough. Listen, let's talk about fun. This is a fun play. So first of all, full disclosure, you and I go back decades. I think it's
when
almost two
Outer
decades.
Space.
It's 2006 or 2009. Four?
Four? Five.
2005. Maybe. And okay, listen,
I don't know.
Pushing,
I don't remember.
We're pushing two decades. So, but I think I have to say, just so people know. But that doesn't take away from the fact that I fucking loved this play. And people should come and see it. I know I don't always say that. When you see a friend in a play, you're like, wow, you did it. Well done.
That's an old Billy Connolly trick. I was like, If you go see a friend in a play and then you don't have anything great to say, you just go and then you have to meet them afterwards. You have to say, it's like, you did it again.
You guys look like you were having fun up there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The lighting was amazing.
So that I did not have that. I told you when we were chatting outside that Listen, people know that I cry at things, but I cry when I'm in touch with my emotions and when something kind of gut punches me. And there were a couple of gut punches in this. The journey of this play must have been, like, you have, we talked about how many characters, but you also have a kick-ass speech that goes on and you just don't want it to end.
Oh,
it doesn't,
bless you.
Do you know what I mean? Because everything, you're going, I agree and I don't agree. Yes.
Yeah.
No. And you're like, I'm with you. And
wrong.
I know.
Yeah.
So can you tell me like how it was, first of all, you came across this project and when you auditioned? Because it's been around a while, hasn't it?
It's been around. I think Kimba Lee, who's a writer,
right.
she's Asian American,
right?
And I think she had written this, started writing this maybe 4 years ago. And she'd been workshopping it in various writing retreats or something in upstate New York and whatnot. And then it won the first international Brentwood Prize.
Okay.
And it got snapped up very, very quickly by the Royal Exchange in Manchester. And then they partnered with the Young Vic and Headlong and Manchester International Festival.
These are all great names, aren't they?
Which
you're just
are,
literally
I mean,
dropping
it's,
names.
It's a great partnership because it needed all four to kind of come together to bring it to fruition. But also everyone wanted in on the action because of the play itself.
Yeah.
And then I think it was February or late January of this year that they started auditioning. I didn't know about this play. But a lot of the British East Asian community who are especially like in the know about, because I've been doing more film and TV work over the past few years. And the ones East Asians who know about, had heard about this, had been waiting for it for 4 years. Everyone was looking for
Wait for it to be cast, the casting notices to go up.
For it to happen.
Yeah, for it to happen, yeah.
But also it was like this mythical thing where it's like, does anyone have a copy of the script? Everyone wants to read this. No one has a copy of the script. Yeah. Finally, it comes around. And I think every East Asian went up for every part in this.
Yeah.
I then... It's really funny because they asked me to prepare two scenes. You know when they read the whole script?
Yeah, you do.
You pick two.
I want the longest scene. I want...
so I was like, well, there are essentially only two.
Yeah.
The beginning bit.
Yes.
And then the longer second part in 2023. And then, so I just imagine, oh, well, I'll go through like one, two paragraphs of the second one, prepare the first one.
Yeah.
But I got there and it was such a fun room. You know, Roy Alexander Vicey and Kimberly, who was a writer, and Helena Palmer, our casting director, was there. And then we had such a great time. I did the first scene. We're laughing our heads off. And then they said, okay, what's your second scene? I was like, oh, well, you know, can I do... I know the speech is very long. I've seen the other women outside waiting, so I know you're probably going to... I'm going to start it. You cut me off when you want, because I know there's people waiting. But I have to say, if I can just... If you let me go through this the once, I would be so happy because this might be my one and only chance to do this. I just want to play.
Amazing.
I just want to play and you know, and I did. And I walked out of there I was just like, I feel good. It's a good day today of acting.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, because for me, auditions are not, in-room auditions are so rare.
Yeah.
And to have that dynamic and I was like, I felt a good afternoon of acting. That's it. Whether I get it or not, I don't really care. It was just like, that was a gift. A nice afternoon. Yeah, and then it came my way. And then...
Did you jump for joy?
I did. It was funny because they wanted me to do... I did the audition, I think, on a Thursday. And then on the Friday, I flew to Portugal because it was around my birthday.
Right.
So I had a birthday week in Portugal. And they were saying, they called on the Friday, said, could she come back on Monday? I said, no. I can't.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, no, it's okay. We were just wanting
to... Is it a deal breaker? You know.
But I was just like, I can't.
Fair enough.
But it's, oh, no, it's okay, because they just wanted you to read with other potential Kims and other people. I was like, listen, I would love to be there to do the recall, but I can't. Mm. I spent too much money.
Yeah.
Pre-booking all of it. Anyway, so thankfully enough, I'm very gratefully enough, it came my way. Yeah, and then we started rehearsing in Manchester last week of May.
Yeah.
Then we did a run there over the summer.
Yeah.
And then we had a 5-week break then we came to Banffic.
There are other plays out there. We talked about Yellowface, which is a different, it's specifically about one production of Miss Saigon, you know, with
and David Henry Hwang has a very specific take on it as well. It's quite linear as well.
Absolutely. This narrative, but I didn't, this was brought my attention to historically, going back, you know, you're talking about Puccini, whatever, you know, you're gonna be like, what?
South Pacific.
But did you know it was magic? Do you know, hold on something, this is coming together great.
Yeah. Well, A, you read the script and you're laughing out loud. It's like, okay, something's good. Because when you're just sitting there quietly laughing to yourself, already, okay, this won't be too hard to make good, right? And then when we were in the room and it was on its feet, then I realized, oh, this is really, because of the amount of laughter in the room, at the same time, we always had to kind of rein ourselves in, because it's easy to play this for laughs. It's easy to be super gaggy and, you know.
It can actually sound like you're pointing out stereotypes or...
Yeah.
You know,
and stylistically as well, because it goes through different styles. It has to honor the whole 1890, you know, the kind of different eras of acting.
Yeah.
You know, like the kind of Katharine Hepburn style.
Yeah, yeah.
The MASH style.
MASH is great. That you nailed know, it. It was so good.
They nailed it.
Yeah.
And all of those, which, by the way, Jennifer Kirby and Tom Weston Jones, they played the Caucasian characters.
Yeah.
They had a mountain to climb, and they were, not only are they incredible actors, but they're incredible, incredible people to be so generous and very invested as well in having those conversations in the rehearsal room, because those are tricky conversations.
Yeah.
When we're exploring the themes.
Yeah.
But I really thought as well, when I read the speech, which if you guys come to see it, that it's funny, when we were rehearsing that, it was like, there's a lot of, well, we don't want to touch it too much, Lords. We don't want to touch it too much, because I think it all comes from the gut. Of course, you craft it.
Yeah.
But for me, that speech is different every night, because I think the work in rehearsal is to explore the possibilities.
Yeah.
But the work for me personally is that I have to fill up that character with stuff underneath and behind, and fill up her life and, you know, the usual things actors do. They have a biography and like the layers of what she went through, so that when I do speak the things, there's no push in, you know, it needs to seep out.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's kind of a stream of consciousness, this monologue. And it's like a bullet train. It's like a shark. It has to go like that. And if you plan it too much, it sounds planned.
Yeah.
You know, it can sound like a TED Talk.
Yeah.
But that's not what...
I think that's interesting.
To a certain extent, it's like, hello! Because I've got two follow spotlights. It's
like, well, there's also... Okay, there's the generational trauma that you don't know exists. If you've not seen the trauma in your parents or your grandparents that has the unspoken or whatever, and you come into a TED Talk where there is no place to hide on stage, you do it in the round.
Yeah.
So you've got, you can't be, it can't be. It is loose, but you're playing to a crowd. There's nowhere, you can't back yourself into a corner. You are facing someone all the time and not pleasing.
Yeah,
that's incredible. You think of it as a TED Talk, but
no. In terms of, it's funny because sometimes I was asking Kimber. I said, Kimber, I feel am I making sense here? Am I just blathering on? You know, I'm pushing this so that the pace is up and the energy is, and then, you know, and she's like, Lords, I wrote that as a showstopper. Stop the fucking show.
Okay, here we go. Hold this beer. And now we'll take a short break for a word from our sponsors. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Curtain Call Podcast. When we were talking outside before this, I found you do find yourself agreeing and disagreeing at the same time, which is so clever in the writing.
Oh, it's
and you
it's
can
very
see Louise's point, and then you go, but no.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you get to walk that line every night, Lourdes.
Yeah. And really, there is something about having that, breaking that fourth wall, right?
Yeah.
And then every night it's different, because every night I also have, before this speech, I do a couple of characters that do not talk.
Yes.
So in those times, I'm able to listen to the audience. And you can hear when people are, they're my scene partners.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
There's always a scene partner, even when you're doing a monologue.
Yeah.
And in this instance, you can kind of, I feel when my people, my East Asian people are in the house, right? And so there are sentences there that I know will land, and I'm, to a certain extent, I'm saying for them.
Right.
But there are many sentences as well that speak of not Asian specific, but human specific things that, like we were talking about, you know, like a crumb from the table is still food. Surviving on crumbs, and you know, I said this, and I was lucky enough to have gotten some award. And anyway, in my speech that I said, it's just like, you know, for so long, we have contented ourselves with crumbs and convinced ourselves that they are the full loaf in order to keep going. And so much of that is not just the experience of East Asians, but everyone in many ways in life, not just being an actor, but in anyone wanting to...
It's the shut up and be grateful thing that you go, what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. That when the gratitude becomes a kind of servitude.
Yeah.
Like, I've always had a kind of question in my head of a tension between the word, oh, I deserve, and I believe. It's that's a generational thing. It's like, you don't deserve it. You know, deserving what? Deserving what?
Yeah.
But it's become now for me like, oh, well, it's not about what one deserves. It's just like, what do I believe in?
Yeah.
And so much of this play as well tries to break out of what other people have imposed on you in terms of where one needs to be and one, what your place is in the story of other people's narratives. So anyway.
I love it.
That got a little deep.
Good. I mean, listen, I think it's important. I did want to ask how important you see this piece adding to the conversation that is the whole thing about opening up to different experiences for people that look like me, you know, a white male. I don't want to get political, but I see such divisiveness in the world, and you know, and God, and we came out of the pandemic, and we were seeing things like George Floyd, and we were seeing hate crimes, specifically really bad on African Americans and Black people and Asian culture. They just was like, you know, how important is this that adds to this? Listen, guys, just can you just pay attention for an hour and 45 minutes and see life a little bit different, see how you have said this must be what we are told to portray our story as. I found it just, I kind of was getting challenged, going, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to watch South Pacific in the same way. Or The King and I, or whatever. You know, oh my God, of course. Like, I literally was going, ah.
I know. And I loved, like, not South Pacific. I despise South Pacific because of many things.
Yeah.
But for me, what is
and
important...
Miss Saigon. Like, it's...
But for me, what is important, what hit home with me with this is that, that it does make people... All these things that we have watched and absorbed and thought of as great entertainment for years and years, And they are entertaining. But the price that it incrementally asks people like me to pay, in that if we continue being, if we continue to give to the world stories that are very, very limited and are told by people who have not, who do not know this experience. Mm. You know, the popularity of, you know, Puccini, Rodgers and Hammerstein, you know, all these people, the people who made Miss Saigon and wrote all of these, they're white men, old men.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of this is then taking back ownership of our story.
Yeah.
And at the same time, what this production and the working of it has proved to me is the beauty of the allyship, in the sense that there are six of us here. There's a black actress, two Caucasians, three of us Southeast Asians. We're directed by a black director. A writer is Asian American. The way we worked has proved to me the beauty of accepting each other.
Mm.
We're telling this story to break open the narrative that has been told of many years, and hopefully make people realize that there is a price to pay. However, for me, the beauty is that, my God, if we only all just work together.
Yeah, yeah.
Look at the good things that, you know, there's a little magic that comes out.
It sounds so glib and twee, but it's fucking true.
Yeah.
It is really, it's really simple. It's really simple to go, okay, I see you.
Yeah.
I'm listening.
Yeah.
It's great, yeah.
And it also makes for different things in the pot.
Yeah.
You know, like we've been having the same dish for years and thought, yeah, that's good. But actually, if you put everyone else's and accept that, actually, if you mix that up with that, something might you know, come out that's even better.
I think I normally just try and find some sort of more complex argument to kind of throw in, but it's not. It's just that simple.
Yeah.
It's just that simple.
What I like about this play as well is because it keeps, it kind of lulls you into laughing about things. And then you realize, oh my God, it's racist. I've been laughing at racist stuff all my life.
This is it. I still, to this day, so this play is Clark, right? Tom plays the character Clark, who doesn't, you know, look, I'm not spoiling it. You get it. He speaks in Japanese or Polynesian, different Asian words wherever he, for whichever place he is. So he starts out in Japanese, but he's not speaking Japanese. You're going, should I be laughing at this? It's funny.
It's funny. It's so funny. And then you realize, like,
I think you laugh at the absurdity of it and kind of go, actually, you know, 50, 60 years ago, this is how almost that they're, you know, happy talk, you know, it's like,
yeah.
It is basically the same thing that we're pointing out here. Oh my gosh.
And you know, yeah, it's like South Pacific for me is like, you know, oh yeah, it's a history, teaching a lesson about racism, you know, like because the lead characters are, you know, falls in love with someone, finds out that he has mixed race kids and falls out of love for him, and then she realizes, I've been bad about that, so let me overcome that. And it's like, fair enough, you have that thing, but don't make us pay for that.
Yeah.
Or in the very least, don't silence us and be happy talk. Do you mean who does happy fucking talk? Anyway,
it, you do when you're in therapy at the end of your therapy sessions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, but also, the fact that it is, Kimba is very clever, in that you must always be entertaining.
Yeah.
That it needs. That's how she sucker punches you.
Yeah. It's
because she relaxes you with something funny, and then puts out a sharp truth.
Yeah.
And then you go, oh. and then it recycles.
It recycles. And yeah, it's the same. And the great thing is it recycles. You think maybe this time
it'll work out.
It'll work out.
Yeah.
There'll be a different ending. There'll be a bit more compassion. There will be a different light being shone.
Yeah.
No. Oh my God. Okay. We've rambled. I've rambled.
So have I. Oh my God.
No, it's great. It's really good. Well, I could talk to you for... Catching up with you has been amazing.
Oh, I
could talk to you forever. And I think maybe we've covered this, but I do always ask if you could just say, what would be your idea? Somebody comes to the show, they don't know what they're saying, and they leave having been enlightened, or maybe not, you know? What would you like people to take away from the untitled Fuck Me Saigon play?
I think what I want people to take away is from an industry point of view, my takeaway is that I hope you guys give us more space to take up space, because we can do this, you know, because we've waited decades to be in a meaningful theater with a meaningful story that isn't just about poverty porn.
Yeah.
You know, that has something to say, and to have, you know, and not have the fight be so uphill.
Yeah.
In terms of people walking out of this, I just want them to have the effect that it had on you, which is that you are moved enough to kind of explore more or question your own kind of things that you've accepted for so long. Mm. Because that is the daily awakening for me too. You know, doing this play every day, it needs a kind of... It's not a, oh, flashes of inspiration kind of acting. It is a daily kind of fidelity to the truth that you have to play every day, you know. I want people to be moved more than they are impressed. You can watch many things that are impressive, but you're not moved. I'd rather they be moved.
Evel Knievel jumping the Grand Canyon, you know. Impressive, but was I moved? Lords, you are amazing.
Oh, thank you for having me, John.
Thank you so much. And have a great rest of the run. And please pass on my love to the cast. And congratulations on great notices and everything else.
Thank you so much.
Rock.
Thanks for having me.
Lords Fabrez there, currently in the untitled Fuck Miss Saigon play, running at the Young Vic until November 4th. I will put links as to where to get tickets in the show notes. Before I go, I'd just like to say a quick thank you to the press team at the Young Vic for making this chat possible, and to Lords for being such an amazing guest. Just a quick reminder to say that if you like this episode, or indeed any of our episodes of the Curtain Call podcast, please go to whichever streaming platform you use and leave us a rating and review. It does help others like you find this podcast. If you want to reach out to me personally, you can find me on all the socials at John Schwab. Untitled Fuck Miss Saigon Play is at the Young Vic Theatre until 4th of November. Co-produced by Royal Exchange Theatre, Factory International for Manchester International Festival, Young Vic Theatre, and Headlong. Visit youngvic.org for more details. Thank you for listening, speak soon, and stay safe. Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.